Good morning, everyone. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Public Service Commission of North Dakota. It is May 31st at about 10:02 a.m. This is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Public Service Commission. I call this meeting to order. I don't have a lot for opening comments, except for I was waiting for John Hageman to be here. I brought a May 25th of 1929 edition of, of 1929 edition of the Fargo Forum. I thought maybe he would like to look at, and I don't know why my mother-in-law had this in her basement, but I didn't find anything particularly connecting to nowadays or to why it would have been saved, except for on the front page. I won't read the headline, but there's a picture of some kids, and it just occurred to me, as sometimes at least I tend to think, that government and a lot of individuals are just getting too nosy and pushy and always trying to tell everybody else what to do. Lest we think it's just a current phenomenon, in 1929, this picture on the front page mentions a women's club in Riverside, Illinois, has demanded that all cats wear bells to warn the birds. I guess some busybodies are nothing new, apparently.
Was it 1929?
Yes.
It's the year my dad was born. I'll have to look at that paper. Thank you. And then I'll pass it on to John Hager.
I have no other comments. Commissioner Karasius, do you have any opening comments?
Good morning. Just real briefly, one of the items we will talk about involves a line strike that occurred last year. And while April is deemed safe digging month, all months, of course, are safe digging months. It's just not exclusive to April. That's an awareness campaign that is put on both by the PSC along with Common Ground Alliance works on that, and also 811. So just a reminder, and we'll get into some more details on that. We are in the throes of construction season. Things are ramping up and have ramped up again. So just a reminder to everyone that it's that time of the year that we need to be cognizant and, as always, call before digging.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
You know, there's a fairly long agenda, and I'm going to be talking a lot, so I'm going to refrain from any opening comments.
Okay, we'll move into the consent agenda. I move passage of the meeting minutes and seven items on the consent agenda.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, and then to the regular agenda. RC1, I move the commission execute a contract with B&C Concrete Pumping Incorporated in the amount of $1,247,800 for drilling and pressurized grouting for the 2017 Wilton Phase 3 AML project.
Second.
This project is for rotary drilling and pressurized grouting of underground mine workings that are located beneath public roads and a farmstead near Wilton. The AML division estimates about 25,000 feet of rotary drilling will be needed. 4,000 feet of casing will be used, and about 7,500 cubic yards of grout will be needed to fill the voids. Competitive sealed bidding procedures were used. The bid opening was held April 17th, and only one bid was received. That was from B&C Concrete Pumping Incorporated of Williston in the amount of $1,247,800. The AML division's cost estimate for this project was $1,352,500, so we're about $100,000 ahead on this project. On May 1st, the contract was sent to B&C to sign. The signed contract has been returned, and we've also received performance and payments bonds, a certificate of liability insurance, and other materials that were requested. So the contract is now ready for execution by the commission.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Yeah, RC2, I move the commission execute a contract with GeoServe Incorporated in the amount of $40,800 for material testing and other services for the 2017 Wilton Phase 3 AML project.
Second.
A bid is for testing the grout that I mentioned earlier to be pumped into those mine voids and then other services associated with that project near Wilton. In addition to filling the mine voids, the separate contract is issued for testing the grout, including its strength and batch plant specs. Competitive sealed bidding procedures were again used. The bid opening was also on April 17th. In this case, four bids were received. The low bid was from GeoServe of Bismarck in the amount of $40,800. AML Division's cost estimate for the project was $49,125. On May 1st, a contract was sent to GeoServe. That has been returned, signed, and we've also received the performance and payment bonds, a certificate of liability insurance, and the other materials that were requested. So this contract is also ready for execution by the Commission.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, RC3, I move the Commission execute a contract with Hansen's Excavating Incorporated in the amount of $338,105 for construction services at the 2017 Columbus Phase 16 AML project.
Second.
This project involves the elimination of nearly 4,500 feet of high walls at three abandoned surface mines in Burke County. About 225,000 cubic yards of spoil material will be used to backfill the high walls, and about 43 acres will be reclaimed at these three sites. Again, competitive sealed bidding procedures were used. The bid was also opened on April 17th. There were eight bids in this case. The low bid was from Hansen's Excavating of Dalax in the amount of $338,105. Our estimate was $410,800. Getting very good bids on these projects. On May 1st, the contract was sent to Hansen's to sign. It's been returned, and we have also received the performance and payment bonds, the certificate of liability insurance, and the other materials that were requested. So this contract is also ready for execution by the Commission.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC4, I move the Commission execute a contract with Pleasant & Sons Construction in the amount of $199,999.96 for filling sinkholes caused by abandoned underground coal mines in western North Dakota.
Second.
This project involves the excavation and filling of various sinkholes that have formed due to the collapse of abandoned underground coal mines. This sinkhole filling project will occur over the 2017 and 2018 construction seasons, and the contract will have an end date of December 31st of 2018. I want to emphasize that. It's a two-year contract. Again, the competitive seal bidding procedures were used. The IFB for this project set a maximum bid price of $200,000, and the low bidder was determined by the contractor who will be able to fill the most sinkholes based on the total number of cubic yards to fill material specified in the bid. The low bid was received from Pleasant & Sons Construction of Greenville, Kentucky. On May 1st, a contract was sent to Pleasant & Sons to sign. That has been returned, signed. The liability insurance documents and other materials that were requested have been returned, and so this contract is also ready for execution by the Commission.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes the four things regarding AML and gets our process for the year started, or in the case of the last one, for 2 years. But I think it's important to highlight, especially with the third one, that Columbus project. This is phase 16 of it, the ongoing projects. We're using money that is assessed on active coal mine companies around the country that then goes to fix up these dangerous situations from old mine projects that are now no longer in existence. And so that's the source of money for all of these. Moving then to some grain-related things, RC5, I move the Commission adopt an order in case number GE-17-139, granting the request of Besco Grain Limited of Carmen, Manitoba in Canada to operate as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota effective June 1st of 2017.
Second.
Besco Grain projects it will purchase 110,000 bushels of grain annually in North Dakota. They filed a $62,500 surety bond. Besco notified the commission that it has already transacted business as a roving grain buyer in the state, but it does not owe any money for grain purchases in North Dakota. They did not know they needed a license, and when they realized it, they contacted us, got everything in order. And so I recommend that we approve this license.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC6, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-17-170, granting the request of Midwest Grain Testing of Cheyenne, North Dakota, to operate as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota.
Second.
Midwest Grain of Cheyenne projects its annual grain purchase volume in North Dakota will be 100,000 bushels and filed the required $50,000 surety bond. Midwest Grain Trading notified us that they have transacted business as a roving grain buyer. All grain accounts have been paid in full. Midwest would like to do business in the state the right way and has asked that its license application be approved as soon as possible. They, too, did not know they needed a license. He had completed two of three loads that he had on his contract when they became aware of this and took care of payment on those, and they have withheld moving on the third load, but he wants to continue from this contract going on. I did approve a temporary license on May 16th in this case, and that would request that the commission grant the full license.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would just want to point out, I think everybody knows, but Cheyenne is the home, the boyhood home of John Austin, who was a silent film actor, and he moved there. His mother operated the cafe as a boy, and he was the shortest kid in his Lutheran confirmation class. And in his silent film acting days, he was known as the tallest actor in the world, and at various times was reported to be anywhere from 7'1" to 8'11". And he died in 1938 at the age of 48.
Is there any further discussion?
Story with Sam, who feels very short.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC7, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-17-174, granting the request of West Plains LLC of Omaha, Nebraska, to operate as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota effective June 1st, 2017.
Second.
West Plains projects it will purchase 200,000 bushels of grain annually in the state. They filed a $125,000 surety bond. They notified us they have not transacted business as a roving grain buyer in the state, so statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends that the license be issued.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC8, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-17-180, canceling facility-based grain buyer license number 2146, issued to Gavilon Grain LLC at Grand Forks, North Dakota, and ordering the business at Grand Forks is discontinued.
Second.
We received a request to discontinue business from Gavilon Grain for its facility at Grand Forks. I want to emphasize Gavilon is a big player in North Dakota, and this cancellation is just for the Grand Forks facility. It is operated under a facility-based grain buyer license, and they've sold this facility to Viterra USA LLC. The facility will be licensed as a state grain warehouse by Viterra. There are no outstanding storage obligations in the grain inventory in the warehouse, and the majority of the contracts will be assumed by Viterra, with the remainder being kept by Gavilon. Gavilon, as I mentioned, still has facility-based licenses at Carrington, two at Jamestown, Minto, New Rockford, Wales, and Valley City. Gavilan asked that the request to discontinue be approved effective May 1st so their transaction could be completed. So I did sign a temporary order in this case, and I would request the full commission approval.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I did mention Carrington in here as one of those Gavilan sites, and of course everybody knows Jim Kleinsasser, the legendary Minnesota Viking and UND football player, is from there. But also, Laura Eisenhuth was the from Carrington and was the first woman elected to statewide office in the United States when she was elected to the Superintendent of Public Instruction in 1893.
Wow. Oh. That's really good trivia.
Yeah. I also mentioned Valley City, by the way, which James McPherson, if he was here, I would point out, is from there, a Civil War historian and Pulitzer Prize winner. So I'm not sure if that's the same James McPherson as we like to see at our meetings.
We like Blake, too, though. So what was the year of that? First woman elected?
She was our superintendent of public instruction in 1893 and 94. So I imagine the 1892 election, probably.
Wow. First in the U.S.
Yep. Laura Eisenhuth.
That's something you don't hear North Dakotans bragging about, but we should be.
We've always been progressive, haven't we?
We sure have. And the cats with the bells, that wasn't a North Dakota group of women.
No.
That was Illinois, I noticed in the...
Yes. John, we have a gift for you later. So.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, RC9, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-17-150 granting the request of Viterra USA LLC to operate a 3,789,000 bushel grain warehouse at Grand Forks, North Dakota.
Second.
Viterra, this relates to the previous case there. They're taking over that Grand Forks facility. They filed the application to operate it. The location, as I said, was previously licensed by Gavilan as a facility-based grain buyer. Viterra operates already licensed grain warehouses at Crystal, Minto, and Ray. And with the addition of this warehouse, we'll have a combined capacity of 4,558,000 bushels. Viterra has a $1,384,500 surety bond on file with the commission. They notified us they have not transacted business as a warehouseman at this location, but asked that the app be effective May 1st. So I did sign a temporary order. Statutory compliance has been met, and we recommend that the full license be issued.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Keeping in tune with my progressive great women of America theme, Ray is the home of Mary Sherman Morgan, who invented Hydyne, which they combined with liquid oxygen to propel the first U.S. rocket into orbit in 1958. Must have quite a science program there in Ray.
First STEM program. Started by that first woman superintendent, I'm sure.
Laura Eisenhuth.
Yes.
Is there any further discussion?
Nothing.
Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
And lastly, RC10, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-17-224 granting the request of Merus LLC of Minneapolis, Minnesota to operate as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota effective June 1st of 2017.
Second.
Merus projects it will purchase 75,000 bushels of grain annually in North Dakota and filed a $50,000 surety bond. They notify the commission it has transacted business as a roving grain buyer, but it does not owe any money for grain purchases in the state. The statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends that the roving grain buyer license be approved so they can operate appropriately.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, that concludes my portfolio. Commissioner Crashes.
I'm next.
You're next.
At least on my list I am, on the agenda.
You are right.
Okay.
I got my files out of order here.
All right. Well, that was a good list of licensing issues, and there's something else important going on with licensing that I think is worth noting, and that is that they're nearing the completion of their online licensing program, which we rolled out this year for the first time. So this is the time of year when all the renewals happen, and that division has gone to online licensing, which is significant for the commission. Previously, everything has been done by mail. And so companies will be able to do the entire process online. And this is the first step to online licensing for others in the room who do a lot of permitting with the commission. Within a year, we hope you'll be able to do your permit applications all online as well. And we'll get rid of the multiple 10 copies of huge binders, maybe just one copy, or there might be a few copies. But anyway, the application will be done online. So it's part of our efficiency matters and saving some money, streamlining things, and also making things easier for the companies that work with us as well. So we'll be interested in feedback on
It'll
that.
It'll be interesting once it's worked well for a week or so here.
Yeah. They're testing, right, still?
Yes.
Yeah. But it's a good project, and kudos to the IT folks who do all that work behind the scenes and don't get much credit for it.
Well, I'll say our IT folks and our green licensing people who have worked many, many extra hours making sure from a hands-on perspective that this is going to work. It just doesn't work for the IT people, that it actually will work for the people that we license and need out there buying grain around the state. So
yeah, because it involved credit card payments and everything. So yeah, it's a big change for us. Seems like it should have happened a long time ago if you look at how the rest of the world operates online, but sometimes things take a little longer in state government. So we're getting there. All right, there's a little bit of everything in my portfolio today, but I'll start with my first one. I move that the commission adopt the order issuing first reissued certificate of site compatibility number 41, first reissued certificate of corridor compatibility number 161, and first reissued route permit number 173 in Antelope Hills Wind Project West Branch Wind Project Transfer Siting Certificates and Permit Siting Application Case Number PU-16-671.
Second.
On November 15th of last year, Antelope Hills Wind and West Branch Wind filed a joint application for transfer certificate of site compatibility and corridor compatibility and route permit from Antelope Hills Project LLC to West Branch Wind Project LLC. On January 18th of 2017, the commission issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, which provided until February 28th for folks to submit comments or request a hearing on this issue. No responses or requests for hearings were received. On March of 29th, we discussed this matter informally with applicants and the commission in an informal hearing. And all of that is concludes in the following information. The company Next Era agrees to that provides that West Branch Wind Project, which will be part of Next Era, agrees to assume the rights and obligations of certificate of site compatibility number 41, corridor compatibility number 161, and route permit number 173, and agrees to comply with all of the terms and conditions set forth therein.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. I move the commission deem complete the application for a certificate of site compatibility and issue a notice of filing and public hearing in Oasis Midstream Services, LLC, Wild Basin Gas Plant, McKenzie County Siting Application, case number PU-17-181.
Second.
On May 4th of this year, Oasis Midstream Services, LLC, filed an application for a certificate of site compatibility for the expansion of its existing Wild Basin gas plant from 80 million standard cubic feet per day of gas processing to add an additional 265 million standard cubic feet per day of processing capacity to the existing plant. Additionally, the expansion will include a 200 MCF processing train up to 65 million SCDF in modular mechanical refrigeration units, natural gas liquid storage, NGL truck offload area, a fourth stabilizer for increased crude oil throughout, and a 150,000-barrel working capacity storage tank to accommodate increased gathering throughput. We'll be setting a time for this hearing in the admin portion of the meeting, or we'll be setting a date. It will be in August at some point at 9 a.m. Central Time at the Teddy Residential Suites in Watford City. And like I said, we'll set the hearing date at the admin portion of the meeting. But basically in the application, the company states that they're expanding this to satisfy current production levels and anticipation of future development. This project is 6 miles northeast of Watford City, and they anticipate it becoming operational in November of 2018, with construction starting this fall.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I'll just point out, you know, for I sort of lose perspective of exactly the time, but a few years ago when 30% of the gas was being flared, and it's down significantly over the years, it just took a while for investment and opportunity to come together and meet the needs of the quick build-out of that Bakken resource out there. And this is another big step in it, going from, what did you say, 80,000 to adding 235 to it. So pretty close to quadrupling the size of that is significant investment and a significant step in the way to capturing just as much of that gas as possible. So it's good news. I look forward to the hearing.
Mm-hmm. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. I move the commission deem the application for amendment complete and issue a notice of filing and notice of opportunity for hearing in Thunder Spirit Wind LLC, Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Group, Inc., Thunder Spirit Wind Project, citing application case number PU-17-192.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. On May 10th of 2017, MDU filed an application for a second amendment to first reissued, first amended Certificate of Site Compatibility number 35. MDU proposes an amendment to increase the total authorized project generating capacity from 150 megawatts to 155.5 megawatts in this previously approved sited wind farm and partially constructed in order to install 16 additional 3-megawatt wind turbines in previously approved locations. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by July 5th of 2017. The commission can determine this matter without a hearing, or we can decide on our own to create a hearing and go down and offer more opportunity for public input on this project down in the location where it's being constructed. This is Thunder Spirit. It's down in the southwest corner of North Dakota.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order, issuing corridor certificate number 198 and route permit number 209 in Target Badlands LLC 8-inch crude pipeline project, McKinsey County, citing application case number PU-16-695.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. On November 15th, Targa filed an application for a waiver of procedures and time schedules and a combined hearing for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for this project. It is an 8-inch existing crude oil gathering line of 54.35 miles in McKinsey County, North Dakota. And this is basically a conversion line. The pipeline was developed as a gathering line, and the company sought to convert it into a transmission line.
So the we held the hearing in Watford City on March 27th, and got a lot of good input there, including some input from the public. The total cost of the project was approximately $85 million. Targa concluded there's a need to convert the project to a transmission line to allow for ease of operation and to more safely operate the project. Conversion of the gathering line and utilization of the tanks would provide a reliable transportation method for up to 50,000 barrels per day. Utilization of the tanks would allow Targa to better manage operations and safely shut down the flow of oil in event of an unanticipated interruption of service or unavailability of the delivery point in Alexander. Finally, the use of the storage tanks will reduce overall pressure in the pipeline, further increasing safety of the project. There was a number of agencies, 27 agencies were notified of this project, as is typical of our process, and a number of those agencies provided comments back to the company, all of which were incorporated into our hearing and into any changes necessary on this line. The State Historic Preservation Officer concurred with the determination that no historic properties are affected. There's no exclusion areas present within the survey area. And there were a few avoidance areas included within the area. The project is within 500 feet of 14 rural residences and one business. Waivers were obtained from the business and all but one residence. So in the case of the one residence, this is something that we really dug into during the hearing. Prior to construction of the pipeline in 2011, the previous owner of the property executed an easement to allow construction of the pipeline. In the spring of 2013 and following construction of the pipeline, the present owner of the property located a rural residence within 500 feet of the project with knowledge of the pipeline's existence. So the pipeline was created first. Somebody moved in a residence after it was constructed and operational. So we are determining with this order that under the circumstances, there's no reasonable alternative but to allow the project to remain in its current location, and accordingly, a waiver is not required. The Little Missouri National Grasslands is an avoidance area and is present within the survey area but is not crossed by the route. There are a number of different cultural sites fall within the study area, but as I said earlier, SHPO has concluded that no historic sites were affected. There are a few wetlands and water bodies along the route, but any direct impacts from the pipeline placement was temporary, and there's no significant impacts on those either. Targa testified that they are a member of the Sakakawea Area Spill Response Company, LLC. There are participants in the North Dakota One Call notification system, and the design, construction, operation of the pipeline is in accordance with the U.S. DOT standards set forth in 49 CFR Part 195. So I think that concludes the highlights of this project. It seems that the conversion is in order in this case to maximize the capacity of this existing infrastructure and operate it more efficiently and effectively.
We have a motion, a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
Okay. Having reviewed filings by Dakota Access LLC and construction inspection reports filed by its construction inspector, I move the commission open an investigation under North Dakota Administrative Code Section 6902.0108 regarding Dakota Access LLC's compliance with the commission's orders and North Dakota siting laws and rules, excluding issues related to an October 2016 unanticipated discovery and associated route adjustment, and issue a notice of hearing on investigation in Dakota Access LLC Dakota Access Pipeline Project siting application case number PU-14-842.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. This is a follow-up to construction inspection reports that we received on January of 2017, indicating that in 83 locations, the construction inspection contractor identified via desktop reviews of aerial photos locations where the company cleared significantly more trees than were permitted by our order. The report concluded, and I'm quoting from this construction report, is our conclusion that DAPL did not follow the, quote, tree and shrub mitigation specifications, unquote, listed in the PSC order, particularly in regards to item 7, leaving mature trees and shrubs intact where practical, and item 8, clear cuts, 85 feet as amended by the PSC. When viewing the aerial photos, it seems apparent that the entire 150-foot ROW, or right-of-way, was cleared whenever possible, and not selectively clearing the ROW also seems apparent. So that's the conclusions of the third-party construction inspection contractor. The reasons we have regulations regarding trees and shrubs in North Dakota is that they're hard to grow, especially in western North Dakota. So that's why the commission cares about this and has rules regarding it. This investigation today is one of the tools we have to bring the company and other witnesses in to ask questions and really dig into this finding by the contractor and get more specifics on it and determine if it warrants any further action. So the notice basically reads that we'll be setting a hearing during the admin portion of the meeting, and that will be here at the commission hearing room in the state capitol, and the investigation will cover construction events reported in filings by Dakota Access LLC and by commission's construction inspector, and related to those events, the degree to which Dakota Access complied with the commission's orders and North Dakota siting laws and rules, excluding compliance related to the October 2016 unanticipated discovery and associated route adjustment. So this is one of the tools, like I said, one of the tools that the commission has to get more information. It's more of an informal way. There is no action after this. There's no determination made as during that investigative hearing. And it will just lead to a conclusion whether we want to pursue a complaint or whether we don't believe there's enough data to suggest that the company really did something wrong and against the order.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. And my final item today, I move the commission adopt the order to show cause and order dismissing complaint without prejudice and issue a notice of hearing and order hearing on order to show cause in Dakota Access LLC, Dakota Access Pipeline Project Siting Application, case number PU-14-842.
Second.
Thank you, Brian. Again, on this one, we'll set a hearing during the admin portion of the meeting. But just to give a little bit of the background, the commission held the hearings on the permitting of Dakota Access. We issued our certificate in January of 2016 and supplemental orders on May 24th and June 22nd of 2016, respectively. Provisions in that certificate, there's two provisions in law and the certification document that clearly outline the company's responsibility to notify the commission prior to any route change and get clearance from the commission before proceeding. If you recall, on October 25th of 2016, K2, which is our third-party construction inspector, filed a site inspection trip report with the commission. The report stated that on October 21st of 2016, K2 found an area flagged off from construction traffic and was informed by the environmental inspector with Dakota Access that an unanticipated discovery was found on or around October 15th of 2016, 10 days prior to this inspection, which resulted in a reroute of the right-of-way that was, quote-unquote, approved at that time. Dakota Access had commenced construction of the reroute prior to notifying the commission of the discovery of the cultural resource. Dakota Access had not at that point in time informed the Commission of the unanticipated discovery. Upon the request of the Commission, Dakota Access formally provided the Commission with information concerning the unanticipated discovery and route adjustment on October 27th of 2016. A formal complaint was prepared and filed by the Commission's advocacy staff and was served on Dakota Access. There has been a fair amount of back and forth in the last few months between the company and advocacy staff. So at this point, the Commission has determined that the complaint brought against Dakota Access should be dismissed without prejudice and that an order show cause hearing allowing Dakota Access to respond to the allegations of noncompliance with law. With the law and commission orders following the unanticipated discovery of a cultural resource and subsequent reroute of the project route is a more efficient and appropriate proceeding under the formal complaint process. This is the first enforcement-type action taken under citing by the commission, and we really believe that at this point this is the best and most efficient way to proceed and come to a decision on this matter.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. And Mr. Chairman, that concludes my portfolio.
Commissioner Gracious.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. BK-1, I move the Commission adopt the order on consent agreement and Public Service Commission Carstensen Contracting Incorporated Damage Prevention Enforcement Case Number PU-17-571.
Second.
Thank you, Julie. And I stated earlier this was last year during my opening remarks, but it was actually in 2015. On July 17th, 2015, the Commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from One Oak alleging a violation by Carstensen of North Dakota violating Century Code Section 49-23-04 for failure to provide an excavation notice to the North Dakota one-call notification center at least 48 hours before beginning excavation while performing installation of a water line in Williston, North Dakota. As a result of the excavation, damage was caused to One Oak's 12-inch steel highline or high-pressure wellhead natural gas discharge pipeline. Immediately following the damage, Carstensen removed its equipment from the area and made contact with One Oak contractor locator to notify them of the damage. Carstensen also placed a new one-call ticket with an excavation area description that included the area where the strike occurred on the line. One Oak alleged that the cost to repair the facility was approximately $61,387, and $294,000 worth of wellhead natural gas was lost as a result of the damage. No customers were directly affected by the incident. As a result of the investigation, Public Service Commission advocacy staff believes Carstensen violated the North Dakota Century Code Section 49-23-04. And under the consent agreement, Carstensen Contracting agrees to be assessed a civil penalty of $15,000, remitting $10,000 of that, of the $15,000 payable to the North Dakota Public Service Commission. And the remaining $5,000 civil penalty is suspended on the condition that Carstensen commits no further violations of the North Dakota one-call law and within 5 years of the date of the order approving the consent agreement.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, BK-2, I move the Commission close Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Incorporated, 2016 Gas Operations Annual Report, case number PU-17-146.
Second.
Thank you, Julie. Staff has reviewed the annual report, and for 2016, MDU's return on equity was 7.74% in 2016, versus an authorized rate of return of 9.5% in the most recent rate case, which was PU-15-90. And with that in mind, MDU under-earned by about $1.8 million in 2016. Staff believes the under-earning was caused by lower usage and higher infrastructure investment than anticipated by MDU. And the lower usage in particular was due to both an abnormally warm winter and usage levels not rising as high as expected due to a slowdown in the Bakken. Due to the above factors and results, it's possible MDU will file a rate case in the coming months, but also seeing that the under-earning is relatively small and not causing a company stability problem, staff sees no reason to further investigate and recommends that the commission close the above caption case.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
BK-3, I move the commission close Northern States Power Company 2016 Natural Gas Annual Report, case number PU-17-185.
Second.
All right. Thank you, Julie. Northern States Power Company provides natural gas service to about 55,473 customers in North Dakota. Staff has reviewed NSP's annual report filing for 2016. Their actual rate of return was 4.63% in 2016, compared to an authorized rate of return of 10.75% in the most recent rate case, which is PU-06-525. With that in mind, NSP under-earned by about $2.3 million in 2016. And when you consider the impact of weather, NSP would have under-earned by about $2 million, or the rate of return would have changed to 6% rather than 4.63% had it been a normal year in terms of weather. Staff believes the under-earnings, again, were caused by the lower usage and increased infrastructure investments as well, and as mentioned, the abnormally warm winter. The average rate base in 2016, also worth noting, was $52.8 million, which is $9 million higher than the rate base at the time of the last rate case, which is in 2006. Seeing that the under-earnings is relatively small and not causing a company stability problem, again, staff sees no reason to further investigate and recommends the commission close the above caption case.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, my final one, BK-4. I move the commission assess a filing fee of $10,000, suspend the tariff and proposed rates, and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Incorporated, Gas Transportation, schedules 81 and 82, tariff and rates, case number PU-17-194.
Second.
Thank you. On May 17, 2017, Montana Dakota Utilities Company, a division of MDU Resources Group Incorporated, filed an application to revise its transportation service rates, 81 and 82 tariff and rates. The proposed tariff and rate change would eliminate duplicate sections of the tariff and simplify the balancing provision currently included in the tariff. The changes would impact those customers taking service under the transportation service rate schedules 81 and 82 and have no impact on residential rates. The two issues to be considered in the proceeding are what rates and charges are necessary to provide a just and reasonable rate of return on MDU's property, used and useful for the service and convenience of the public in North Dakota, and secondly, are MDU's proposed rate schedules designed in such a manner that they would result in a basis of charge to its customers that is just and reasonable without discrimination. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing, and comments and requests for hearing must be received by June 17th, 2017.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That wraps it up for me.
Okay, that concludes our regular agenda. Regarding announcements, I'll just point out that it's been for a while, but the case number PU-17-113, it's a Northern States Power Company special facilities rider informal hearing that was scheduled originally for this afternoon at 3:30. That is canceled. One thing that I think public might be interested in that you might want to start getting on your calendars in advance, on Wednesday, June 28th, we'll be holding a formal hearing down in Ashley at the City Hall on case number PU-08-932. It's EDF Renewable Development Incorporated. That is the Maricourt Wind Power Project. With that, the commission will stand in recess for questions from the press, followed by a short break, and then shortly after that, we'll reconvene for the administrative portion of the meeting. Last one in, first one up with a question.
On the motion to open an investigation into Dakota Access, did you say that was 83 areas that were discovered that supposedly too many trees were removed, or I guess how would you?
There's, and you're welcome to get a copy of the third-party construction inspection report. It's docket number 258 is the inspection report that covers this, and it's a desktop tree and shrub review. Mm-hmm. And there is basically a listing of all of the locations in a table where they, from desktop review of aerial photos, have concluded as near as they can with that information that the company cleared beyond the 85 feet specified in the permit of trees.
Okay.
And I think on that point, John, it's important to remember it's trees and shrubs. We're not always talking about 40-foot ponderosa pines here. It can be some smaller shrubs, too.
Okay. What could be the, I guess, result of that investigation? I mean, could a formal complaint ultimately result, depending on what you find, and then, you know, potential monetary penalties, or I guess what is the next?
Yep, that could. We could determine that there isn't evidence to warrant a complaint, or we could decide that we need to go the next step, and a complaint could result as come as a result of that, and then there would be, then we go down that track of the complaint process with a hearing both sides would develop the evidence and make the briefs and file them, and we'd have a go through the hearing process. And then after that concluded, you could come to a decision, or we could do an order to show cause also after the investigation, which would basically say we think that there's a violation here. Company, you respond and tell us why you don't think you violated the law. So it could go that route as well.
What are the statutory fines for these violations, potentially?
The fines are $10,000 a day per violation, up to the maximum is $200,000 per violation, I believe.
Is that for both the shrubbery and also the...
For any violation of the siting, yep. Per violation, $10,000 up to $200,000 max.
$10,000 is a floor, then? Is that a floor violation? Is that a floor violation?
No, up to $10,000 per day.
Per day, okay.
Per day.
Up to
$10,000. Yep, so if it was, $10,000 times 20 days, or say it was 30 days, you can do $300,000. You'd cap it at $200,000. Like?
The order to show cause hearing, the company's filed numerous documents in this case. You mentioned there's been a lot of back and forth. I mean, do you feel that they still haven't laid out their case adequately, or why the decision to go with this hearing?
Well, that, again, this is the first siting violation that we've developed a process for at the commission. And at this point, this just seemed like the best way to move forward because it brings out all the parties together, and we can talk to the company, and they can lay out their case directly, and we can come to a decision the most efficiently. It seemed more efficient than going through the alternative hearing process with the advocacy staff and the company forming their separate sides.
Because you dismissed that complaint without prejudice, does that mean that that complaint could be basically refiled if after this hearing, or I guess what?
I'd have to defer to our attorney for the specifics on that. Zach, can you explain what without prejudice means?
It technically could be refiled, but if the process was to go through the order to show cause, which is the process that the commission voted to go to today, it would be very unlikely.
Yep.
If it's unlikely to be refiled, I mean, should you determine after that hearing that there's some reason to go forward, what would the process be then?
My understanding of the process is after that hearing, we can make a determination that there was a violation based on the order show cause hearing. We don't need to go with that separate complaint process. This is basically in place of that. So we can make a decision. We can come to a decision and will come to a decision after the order show cause hearing.
But it's still potentially finable.
It is, yes. The same fines exist. Same potential fines and fining regimen.
So it's essentially just you're still pursuing this issue, but it's just that you're taking a different avenue to, weigh both sides of it.
Right. Okay. Yep.
Bo? Nick? Okay.
You got to ask a question on your last day, Nick. Come on.
One last
shot. What would the timeline be after this hearing? Would you be making that determination the same day, or what's kind of the timeline?
Not the same day. We almost never make a decision in the same day as a hearing, but I'm pretty eager to wrap this up. So, barring any unforeseen circumstances, I'd like to have the hearing and have a work session if we need it. And come to a decision as quickly as possible.
And when that decision's made, what's that? Would that just be the fine or whatnot at that point, or would there be further hearings? I guess I'm just a little hazy on what's after that.
After the idea here is we have the order show cause hearing, where the company comes forward and makes their case. We can ask some questions on the witness stand. There's an administrative law judge that will help administer the hearing. We ask questions, get to the bottom of the issues, and then after that, the hearing's closed. We've got all the evidence in the record, and we make a decision whether they did or didn't violate the law and our permit. And then the decision is, if we say they didn't, then there obviously isn't going to be a fine. And if we believe they did, then there probably will be a fine. So those are the options that I see there. And a decision then would be rendered as soon as we can come to one after that hearing.
And, again, the same potential fines exist under this order to show cause hearing as they did in the complaint.
That's correct. It's just a slightly different process.
Could you then require them to replant?
Regardless of what we determine on the potential violations of the permit and the clearing of the trees, et cetera, the company will have to replant based on a tree and shrub mitigation plan that is yet to be approved by us as well. But yeah, and all the specifics on where they'll replant and how will be defined in that tree and shrub mitigation plan.
If this ends up resulting in a fine, I guess what kind of timeline would they have, to pay? Or what if they were to disagree with you and try to push the case further? What would happen then?
Well, again, I probably have to ask our attorney for the appeals process, but they'd always have an opportunity to appeal to district court, correct, Zach? District court, if they feel that we have reached a conclusion that is not a fair one.
Something you just said on the tree and shrub mitigation plan. So what you're saying is even if you don't find that they violated any citing laws or the permit or anything on the tree and shrub removal, they'll still have to replant according to that plan.
That's correct. And that's with every single case, every pipeline case, every siting permit comes with a tree and shrub mitigation plan that spells out how the company is going to replace the trees and shrubs that it's taken out during construction. And in this case, there will be a certain, on pipelines, there's a certain amount of the right-of-way that is left cleared, but they still replant trees typically on a 2-to-1 basis for every tree that's removed. They replant two of them, and they replant them if they can't replant them on the top of the right-of-way, which on the pipeline they didn't want to do, they replant them someplace else. They work that all out, and that's all specified in the tree and shrub mitigation plan.
And that's something that normally has a bit of a delay in it, because like in the case of a pipeline, as Commissioner Fedorchak mentioned, you don't want them replanted in the same place they were, right over the top of the pipeline. And so they need to find an alternative place, and some of the ag producers don't want them replanted there. So then they have to go find somewhere else to put them. And so it takes them typically a while to get that all ironed out, and maybe that where they do find a place for them, the request is for a different species or something like that. So it's not abnormal that there's a delay in the tree and shrub mitigation plan.
And then they also have to count them all, too. There has to be an official count that they estimate on the front end, and then they do more of an official count that they submit with the tree and shrub plan. And the entire, I don't want to be confusing here, the entire right-of-way for construction isn't left treeless. There's a certain part, a certain corridor, I believe it's 35 feet, Patrick? That's left, there are company representatives here, so you could find out from them, and that's spelled out too and agreed to in the permit, how wide this permanent cleared right-of-way is over the pipeline. But just if they cleared 150 feet of trees, well, first of all, we spelled out 85 feet. So there's at least, 65 feet of trees that could be replanted in that area, and probably a little bit more. So all of that is worked out with the landowners, and the company determines, how wide of a permanent right-of-way they want for clearing, and we agree with that. And all those are worked out in the tree and shrub mitigation plan.
Anything else? Well, Nick, working right till the final buzzer. That's
good luck.
Impressive. Good luck in Michigan. We'll keep the lights on for you in case you decide to return to North Dakota.
Sounds like a plan.
Thanks for all your work here, and good writing and good reporting, and good luck in your next location.
Okay, so we will reconvene at about 12 minutes after 11.
12 minutes after.